The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Dramatic music ruined by my nasty tablet. Hi, everyone. My tablet's dying, but we are not. We are here for Gotham Extra number 2. I am Karen, the Scarlet Cougar. Rawr.
And I'm Jeff, X-Force 11.
And that's
I'm
the
John,
Force.
The substitute.
And yours would be like what chalk on a blackboard? The substitute. Is that what yours would be? I don't know what your sound effect would be. Jeff's would be, because that's Force, right? And then substitute. Hold on. What would it be? Here. Swapping out. Swapping.
Like the Wonder Twin powers coming together.
There you go. There you go. Okay.
And welcome to Gotham Undercover.
That's right. We are part of the Golden Sparrow Media Network. Find us at goldensparrowmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for Gotham Undercover.
Yes, indeed.
Tell us about our special episode, Jeff.
Yes, we are talking about The Dark Knight, which was written by Christopher and Jonathan Nolan. And we'll get into Christopher's credits here, but Jonathan's done work on Westworld and Person of Interest and The Dark Knight Returns and Rises. And then David S. Goyer, who's done many comic book movies.
Right.
I didn't even bother listing them because there's so many. He's written for several episodes of Constantine, and he's writing on the upcoming Green Lanterns Corp. Movie and Sandman. So
yeah, some nice and the stuff Sandman. There. I can't wait for the Sandman.
I didn't know that was going to be a whole film. Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to Green Lantern Corps because it's got John Stewart on there. So that's,
yeah,
he's one of my favorites.
He's sadly ignored a lot of the time. I like that they included him in the JLU comic adaptation.
Yeah,
the TV.
Right.
Cartoon.
Well, that's what got me actually reading Green Lantern comics was him in the jail TV series. And then I come in and it's not him. So,
right.
Anyway.
Right. Well, Hal Jordan was always my Green Lantern, but
yeah,
I do like Jon Stewart.
Too.
So, yeah.
And then Christopher Nolan directed, who he also did Inception, Prestige, Interstellar, and many more.
Many more. And we all know that how much Jonathan Nolan has impacted recent things. I mean, Westworld, for one, big time, huge deal this year. Person of Interest, a personal favorite of mine.
Yeah, me too.
So, I mean, these guys are, I mean, they have cred. And one of the things that I think got them to the point where they could make these projects is The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So I think this is a great project for us to take on, is this movie. And I have to say, so much better than the last movie we watched.
Definitely.
Not even a comparison.
No. Not even close. Not even close. So ratings time. How did we do?
All right. I gave it 9.5 insane clown posses.
Nice. I went a little bit down, and here's why. It's long, really, really long. And anytime I have to pause a movie to get up and go to the bathroom, I can't give it that like 9.5 or 10. Number 2 pencils, which is like the most trite rating ever, but still. What did you give it, John?
I gave it 9.5. Should have been Billy Dee Williams as Harvey Dent.
Right? Right? It really should have. Although
he got the shaft.
This guy was okay. He got the shaft. Oh, yeah. Shaft. John Shaft. Billy
you
D.
Know, Karen, I hear you. It is long, but as many times as I've seen this film, I don't notice that it's long. And I think I think that's what just is the clincher for me in this film is that it just it moves and it's like it never slows down and you just get to the end and you're like, whew.
I think the first time I watched it, I didn't notice, but the older I get, the more I notice it.
Well, that may yeah. be other issue.
Right. Exactly.
Well, for me, yeah, I sense its longness, but it's because of, and we'll get into this, Heath Ledger's performance.
Oh, yeah. And
because it's hard for me to watch it, like doing the notes on this, I did it in two settings. Mm-hmm. Sittings. I did like an hour and then an hour and a half because of his performance and how into that performance he was and just the after effects of that. And so I just mentally knowing what happened because of it, I have to break it up for me. But yeah, I agree. It just moves along.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I really do. I agree with you guys 100% that it's warranted. The length is warranted. And I'm glad they didn't break it up into two movies because sadly we wouldn't have gotten him back as the Joker, right? Most likely. Yeah. But there's just something in it that I'm like, oh man, I got to pause it and come back. And to me, if I have to lose momentum a little bit, I got to take it down. But it's still worth a 9 to me, which is saying a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, any other thing, if I had to stop it and come back, it would be like a 7. You know, it would really take it down a lot. But this movie is just so good. And I think the reason it's so long, in this case, there's a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons is that so many of these characters are completely developed characters.
Mm-hmm.
Harvey Dent is round. I mean, he's not like two-dimensional in this movie. He is fully developed and he's a side character. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Joker is just like a million dimensions in this movie. And Batman, Bruce Wayne, is... I mean, he explodes in this movie. There are so many things happening with him. And of course, we get Lucius. His performance in this movie also is also great. I love that he is like the, what's the little cricket's name in Pinocchio?
Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah, he's the Jiminy Cricket to Bruce's Pinocchio in this movie. He really is. He's the conscience when it comes to Bruce Wayne. And Bruce Wayne is already halfway there. It's just that he needs that tempering in this case. And mm-hmm. we also get a little bit of Alfred doing yeah. that. But I think really, you know, it's Lucius saying, hey, this could be dangerous.
Yeah.
If you continue this.
Mm-hmm.
And
I even felt like the mayor, I mean, for being a side character, like I really felt like there was a lot there that, you know, just the time that they gave him was... Mm-hmm.
Mayor Guyliner? I
mean, yeah. Yeah.
No, I love him. He's fantastic. Of course, he was in Lost.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, of course, now I can't remember his name. Do you have his name handy?
No.
Oh, crap.
No. Yeah, going back to my Lost brain.
I'll look him up. He is a fantastic actor, and why I cannot remember his name.
Well, but see, that's the thing about that I really enjoy about the Nolans is the way that they get the characters in. They choose the actors well,
mm-hmm.
and they write the characters well-rounded so that you really have a feel that this place exists. When they go off screen, they have a life.
Right.
And that's what makes things come to life is the way that they write those characters, that it is, you know, they've written this as a believable world. and that, you know, this could really happen in real life. And there's some drawbacks to doing that as a comic book movie.
Sure.
But because the way they did that, it really makes you feel that fear and that apprehension for those characters to really get involved and sucked in. And that's just a focus of the writing and who they choose as actors.
Right.
So it just really makes the difference there.
His name is Nestor Carbonell.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Right. And he played Richard Alpert on Lost.
Yes.
One of my very favorite episodes of Lost, by the way, was the one that was based around him.
Oh, yeah. His backstory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, now I can't remember that one either. Ab Eterno was the name of that one.
Yeah.
But it was his backstory and, you know, how he was much older than he appeared and all that stuff. But he's like the epitome of guyliner with the, you know, he's got that really well-defined eye, and his eyes are just riveting to me. I don't know what it is, but he was also on the original live action Tick series. So, and I have watched him ever since then on everything that he's been on. He was on a sitcom with Christina Applegate after that, and then Lost. And when he showed up on Lost, I was like, oh my God, it's that guy from the Tick. But yeah, he was great as the mayor as well. And, you know, you said that about like even the side characters and the auxiliary characters, even the people on the boat. In the boats,
yeah.
I mean, you got a feel for them, like, in their off lives. Even Commissioner Gordon's family, who you only saw in little snippets, you know, you got a feel for, like, who they were when they weren't appearing in front of you. And not just, you know, in real life. It's like, in real life, but in Gotham, you know, in that world. So... that was a huge part of this movie. And speaking of which, let's talk about Gotham, shall we? You see what I did there?
I like it.
So what did we think about Gotham in this movie? How well did they feature the city?
I think it was interesting to see the differences even between Gotham in this movie and Batman Begins. It felt more, we saw a lot more of it in the daylight. It seemed brighter to me than maybe it has been. When we were actually outside, it felt a whole lot more modern than our Gotham. So I think in that way it was a much different Gotham than we kind of see in ours, where, you know, it's a little darker and dingier. And granted, that's set in the past, but it felt not necessarily light and cheery, but it felt brighter and maybe a little more harsh in that light. You know, it's really set off by that beginning scene where we're outside and seeing, you know, the scaling of the, you know, going over to the bank on the roost, but it kind of sets that scene to me. It just seemed a little more modern and techy and brighter in that way.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think, honestly, I prefer the Burton Gotham, that version of Gotham, because it's I think it's much truer to the comic. I think it's, you know, the overstatement of the city, I think, is what feels like Gotham to me. And this, you know, because, well, you know, I know Dark Knight Rises was shot in Pittsburgh, but I don't know if this one was. I can't remember. But this felt like Pittsburgh to me.
Which isn't a good thing all the time, right? I mean, I've been to Pittsburgh several times.
No, I love Pittsburgh. I have family in Pittsburgh.
Do you?
But it didn't seem otherworldly.
Oh, it didn't seem otherworldly. I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this was set with a slightly lighter tone for a reason, because we got the Joker in this one, which tends to be a little more cartoony than broody. And I tend to agree also that I like the dark, bluish-black Gotham. And that's a thing with me, is that I tend to gravitate towards comics in that scheme. The Sandman is almost entirely blue and black. And just, you know, I go for those comics that are in tones of blue and black, mostly because you have to focus on nuance when it comes to dark colors like that. I had to really analyze why I liked comics that were so dark, because I was scaring myself at one point. You know, am I going emo? what is happening here? But I think you tend to focus on nuance when something is so monotone and so dark. And when they go for more light, you have to kind of see everything. And that's what the Joker does, is he opens up everything. He wants you to see what's happening because he is setting the stage. And I think that was intentional. He was, the Nolans were setting this up so that you would see his stage. And his stage in this case was Gotham. And of course, I'm just drawing, you know, my own pop psychology into this. But I would like to think that that's kind of what they were aiming for, was a Joker-like feel for it. That, you know, we had to see all that grit at the bottom of Gotham in order to see what the Joker was doing all the time. I mean, if you look everywhere except the scenes where Batman is fighting hand to hand, which all seem to be in dark places because the Batman is dark. Like when Joker had meetings with people, they were all in kind of light-ish areas. You know, he had a meeting with the heads of the other organized crime units or whatever. He would have a meeting with them like in a freezer.
It was like a kitchen in a restaurant.
Right, yeah. So it wasn't exactly the very lightest room ever, but there was stainless steel around that light would bounce off of, because he wants you to see what's happening. You know, he wants you to see what he's doing. He wants to make sure you get a front row seat to what he's doing. Because,
right, and I think that that contrast of he is who he is.
Right.
And he's calling the Batman out for being two people.
Right.
Really, you know, he wants him to embrace who he is and just be that full out. And he's calling out Batman to do that, to not live that double life, because he is out there. You know, nobody has made him. You know, there's no labels in the clothes. There's nothing to identify him, because he is who he is. And so that's part of his calling, calling Batman out to walk in that as well. So, yeah.
Right. And if you notice, he does wear a mask, and I'm doing air quotes, but it's makeup. And what it really does is it enhances the issues he has with his face. It enhances his scarring. And as we go through the movie, when the makeup starts to kind of wash off, he just leaves it. He doesn't care that it's washing off, because really all it is him saying, hey, I have scars on my face. This is what they look like. So his isn't a mask. And I think that's him also saying, hey, you wear a mask, so I'm going to show you what I look like by enhancing it.
Yeah.
And that's,
and he's always trying to tell people the story.
Yeah. And it's always wrong. Always. Yeah. It's always different and lie.
Yeah.
Which I love.
But it all, you know, always back to his father, and, you know, but he wants people to know, you know, this is what made me the way I am. And he can't stand that Batman is this, you know, secret.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's him crying out so Batman will say what his secret is. He wants to know. I mean, that is the whole deal with him. I have to know who you are. You're my enemy, so I have to know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he wants to know his enemy so bad. That is the thing. There, mm-hmm. again, I mean, we get this mirror not only between Batman and the Joker, but Harvey Dent, who is, it becomes this coin, essentially. And I think the whole mirror thing is that the Joker and Batman are two sides of the same coin as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they are literally a coin. And then, Harvey Dent becomes this two sides of the same coin type character as well.
Yeah, they both used him for their own purposes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bruce is trying to get out of the game and to, let things become public. And so he's using Harvey to do that. Joker's trying to set the world ablaze and let him off the hook. And he's using Harvey as his tool there. And so he gets that dual nature,
right?
You know, literally on his face.
Right. So what's the best way to show that? Make him look like that.
Yeah.
And it's perfect. It really is. And I mean, how better to do symbolism than to literally make a symbol, crux of the movie, make a character into that symbol. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then to give him a coin. I mean, how better can you do it? I mean, I've always said that Batman and the Joker are two sides of the same coin. I'm not the only one. I mean, this is something that has happened through, you know, ever since Batman was created in the 30s, I think, that people think not since then, since the Joker was created. Right. Sorry. You know what I mean? That there are two sides of the same coin. And I really do think that this was a deliberate thing that they pulled Harvey Dent in to make him that mirror between the two of them. And just brilliant storytelling on their part.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant storytelling. And that's what makes this movie so enjoyable to watch, because it's just so intricate and gorgeous. And, it's just amazing to me.
Yeah, and that's another point that, you know, talking about comparisons with Gotham is, it's not on the same level because you're dealing with a movie and a TV series, but that's one of the things I've enjoyed about Gotham, especially in seasons 2 and 3, is the writing, mm-hmm. and how deep into the characters they have gone in trying to give them backstory and personality and choosing the actors that come in and play those parts, whether they be big or small, is it's about the story and building those characters up. And that's what the Nolans did here, is just the class of writing was just so amazing. The dialogue back and forth between Joker and Batman just was amazing, to take decades of what was on the comic book page and put it into one movie, mm-hmm. to really sum up their relationship with each other. Of, you know, the Joker saying, "Kill you, I wouldn't want to kill you, you know, basically you complete me."
Right.
And so to see that walked out on screen and in a movie that had a ton of action, but it did not do action and to negate the dialogue, it had both, you know, and it did it well. So yeah.
Karen, have you seen Lego Batman yet?
I haven't.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, you won't get this joke, but I know Jeff will, that when the Joker said, "No, you complete me," I saw Lego Batman going, ha 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 ha. And Karen, you will get
it's
that
It's still
one.
Funny. Whether I get it or not, it's still funny. And one of the other things about Gotham as well that kind of goes along with this movie is how they do where they give you something and they plant something in the back of your mind,
mm-hmm.
like with the fire in the background in a scene that they want you to think of fire, or like a light shining into the window.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
what's the word I'm thinking of? Subconscious, subliminal. Thank you.
Yeah.
Where they're giving you subliminal clues, and they want you to think of a certain thing. Like, you know, they want you to think of someone as being good, so they shine light onto them. Or they want you to think of someone in a love sense. They put a heart around them. I mean, it's just, but it's not something you would really notice unless you're super, super watching for it. And especially in that storyline with James Frayne, where it was always a fireplace. There was always some sort of fire in the scene where he was going to explode near the end, and it would get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger in every episode. And, you know, I remember, Jeff, you and I were watching it as it went on, and it was true. In every episode, it just got larger and larger and larger. And then finally, he went off the deep end. He went crazy. And they really do a good job with that on the show. And I think it's movies like this that probably inspired that sort of thing on a show like Gotham, where they said, hey, if this movie can do that in a comic book show, comic book setting, then so can we.
Yeah, I think we owe a lot of debt to this movie and the Nolanverse for opening things up to the way things are done now on TV, and to really say, yes, it can work, and yeah, we can do that, and we've got people who are intelligent enough to get it and to, you know, play into that type of thing. I really appreciate just several characters in this movie that I can see that Gotham took that and put it on screen, maybe in a different way, but in ways that you can logically see, yes, they could progress to this point. And if they didn't have that, I don't know if we would have the characters that we do on the TV series. And so we just owe a debt of gratitude there. So, yeah.
Yeah. Should we talk about the characters that are in common between this movie and Gotham?
Sure.
Since that's next on our list. Well, first let's talk about Harvey Dent, because he is in the show. Now, this is definitely the proto version of Harvey Dent on our show. Mm-hmm. He's still building his reputation in the city. And we can see in this movie, of course, he's the later day Harvey Dent. He has become that city's white knight. Again, I'm doing the air quotes that you guys can't see. But he is building his reputation right now. And we can kind of see a hint of that on Gotham, that he is becoming, he's gaining a reputation in the city. Can you kind of see that on Gotham, even though they don't mention him very often?
Yeah, he's been in there here and there with the mayoral race and some other things where he's introduced, and he's been there with the prosecution of Jim earlier, and you know, and so yeah, you can see that there. But he, I think, by necessity has to play the background at this point, because he is not one of those characters that I think can really truly exist before Batman. It wouldn't really make a whole lot of sense to introduce him as Two-Face. Right. But yeah, he is on the rise in Gotham.
Yeah. I like that they've dropped his name at least, though. Mm-hmm.
But he, is he DA, or is he just part of the district attorney's office at this point?
Just part of the office.
Okay, yeah, I was about to say, because, I mean, by the time Bruce grows up and becomes Batman, although he would have had to do it for, you know, 15, 20 years.
Right. Right. No, he's just, like, in the DA's office.
Yeah,
I got just a lawyer there. Yeah. So, yeah. But he is definitely doing things and making a name for himself as a good guy in Gotham. Yeah. So I like how they called him a white knight in this movie, because it kind of sets him up as that, you know.
Well, and I love that Batman, you know, Bruce tells him, you know, you've got to be the face of justice. I can't do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have to be the one that that people can look to as that white knight.
Right. And of course, that foreshadows the ending of the movie big yeah. time, where, yeah. You know, he has to take that fall for mm-hmm. for him. So, yeah, that's that was a big deal back then when I watched the movie. I was like, no, you're the hero we need. Okay, so back to the common characters. Let's talk about Lucius and Alfred.
Yeah.
Now, they swapped roles in this movie a little bit. Alfred, who is usually the main confidant, became the secondary in this movie. And on Gotham, we don't have that yet. I mean, we have Alfred, who is definitely the main confidant. And Lucius mm-hmm. is he's there now in the GCPD, which is good. But right now, he's not really that guy that Bruce leans on yet. He knows he's there. He knows he can count on him, but he's not really that guy yet. So what did you think of the parallels that we can draw between those characters?
Yeah, I really see a progress of, you can see how the fox that we see in Gotham could really grow into the fox that we see in The Dark Knight, because you see his smarts and he has developed those through the years, and his cunning, how he deals with the guy wanting to blow Bruce's cover, and just his intelligence that way of knowing how to phrase things and do things, and that savviness. And I really like that you can see that progression, that character could definitely grow into that other character.
Mm-hmm. And I love how Alfred is, you know, in this film, the sounding board for Bruce and Batman in terms of his motivations, the stories that he tells about the guy in Burma, mm-hmm. how, you know, some people just like to see the world burn.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. You know, just the wisdom and the, I mean, you can tell their relationship is long and deep, and Alfred doesn't have to use, you know, a hammer over the head.
Right.
He just simply lays it out there and lets Bruce come to the conclusion by himself. So mm-hmm.
it's actually it's really telling how well that they play those two roles in this movie. Mm-hmm. That you can tell with the tiny amount of screen time they have together how close they are.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They're friends, you know, deep, deep friends. And I mean, even if you hadn't seen the movie before this, I think you would know that they are. But you also see that, you know, we see a lot more at Wayne Industries. So, of course, we're going to see Lucius more. That's where he and Bruce are friends more than Alfred. Alfred wouldn't show up there. That wouldn't make sense. So, of course, we're going to get Lucius. And I loved how Lucius kind of orchestrated that whole business deal. And when the little toady comes to him and says that he wants money and all that, and he's like, okay, let me get this straight. You're asking for money from one of the most powerful men in the city. And, you know, he goes on that little mini rant, and the guy's like, I think I'll leave. I mean, he's just such a cool character, and I really liked how he was portrayed in these movies and the Nolan films. And I think that his character on Gotham is really just a younger version of this character. Mm-hmm. I mean, the one parallel that I can draw that is like almost like 99% would be Lucius. So
yeah.
One of my favorite moments with Alfred, they're closing down the Batcave, and they're going up, and Bruce is like, no, I was going to tell them it was all your idea.
Right. Right. So but, great.
It's like two bros, you know?
Yeah, they are. So, really. I mean, yeah. And again, that's like on Gotham too. I mean, they're bros, but in a weird way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not bros. It's.
Yeah. He's really the progression from maybe the Gotham era to here. Is he has stepped back from walking out that more physical teaching and physical even fighting alongside to providing, you know, the sounding board, like we've said, and also giving him that insight that he really needs in the history and the background because of all those years of training and being there by his side. He's earned that listening ear and that the ability to offer that sage advice.
Right. He gives him the emotional support.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big deal for him.
Yeah.
Even if he poo-poos it, it's really a big, he needs it. Mm-hmm. Probably more than anyone else needs it. He can't really get rid of that on the job. You know, he takes that all inside. So
he really bears the weight of, you know, he really in this movie, he's entrusted by Rachel with a letter to Bruce saying that she's choosing Harvey. And, you know, she doesn't seal it because she knows him and mm-hmm. knows the background. And he has to choose when to put it there, and he makes a choice of not to give it to Bruce mm-hmm. at that time because he knows how much it'll crush him, and then he, you know, burns it. So he has to bear a lot of that weight of being that check and that gatekeeper for Bruce so that he can go forward in doing what he needs to do.
Right. Bruce,
can I just take a minute and interject here that I thought that it was just brilliant on the Nolan's part and Goyer as the writers to have Bruce be in this complete blind spot where Rachel was concerned.
Yeah, I think so too.
Mm-hmm.
That he knows how to read people. He knows how to play them three steps ahead. He's constantly in this place of being on top of everything, and he is completely blind to where she is and what's going on. And I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, it's perfect.
That it was, yeah, well, that it was written that way.
That's so. His downfall, really, is when he cares about someone. Because he doesn't know what to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Feelings are just, I don't know what to do with feelings. I just need to push them down.
He's so fixated that, you know, she said when Gotham didn't need Batman anymore, she would come back. And he's so fixated on that he just can't even see the bigger picture.
Right.
And I don't know. I thought it was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was really good. Really, really good. I agree. I don't think he would be able to beat Batman without Alfred because
No.
He would have gone nuts and become Joker. I mean, I just don't think that there is any kind of a balance at all without Alfred.
Yeah, and he's that touchstone that really connects him and keeps him connected, that he trusts, and he can see things and he can hear things, but it's that emotional touchstone that he has with Alfred that validates those things and lets him know, okay, I need to listen, or I need to look into things, and I can see that people are good and people that, you know, people can choose the right thing. And so I think he's right now, he's providing that in Gotham. He's giving that, he's helping him see a bigger world in Gotham. He's helping Bruce see what's going on maybe behind things. But I think that will flip later on and give him the touchstone of, you know, so he's able to stay grounded. And he's doing that, you know, in one way now in Gotham, and he's going to do it a different way when he's older as Batman.
Well, and that's why I was in tears in the last Gotham episode when, you know, Alfred, you know, took Bruce and said, okay, there are rules.
Mm-hmm.
And the first rule is we don't kill. And I mean, I'm tearing up talking about it. That, yeah. I mean, you see it. I mean, it was
such an iconic moment too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, this really is where it begins.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know that we've ever seen that before, and it was,
no,
it was moving.
So, yeah. It's implied always that's yeah, where he gets it from, is that moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
From his parents dying, and then from growing up and kind of applying that to his life. But to see it like that, I mean, that's what excited me so much about that last Gotham episode, mm-hmm. was literally seeing Batman being made right there. And yeah, it was really emotional for me. And it's silly, I think, and I'm not belittling you at all. To me, I was like, it's a comic book show, you know, but I thought to myself, but it's something that's so ingrained in me, this character, and he's larger than life to me. So seeing it happen.
And there are people that, you know, I mean, you form your personal worldview out of things that you're exposed to. Mm-hmm. And if comic books and these characters are what does that, I mean, you know, just going off topic for a minute, but you know, looking at The Flash last week and Iris saying to him, your humanity is what makes you what you are. And if you sacrifice that, it's not worth me. It's not worth, you know, and some people are just like, okay, this is how heroes are made. Right. And whether you have superpowers or whether you just want to be a force for good in the world, you know, there are ways to do that. And these origin stories and these creation of who these heroes are that are larger than life have very applicable, implications into our own lives.
Exactly.
So. That's the biggest thing about that people, I think, don't get about comic book TV and genre TV in general, that these, at their best, they are telling human stories.
Yeah.
Now, they may be using the comic genre or the horror genre or the sci-fi genre, but in the end, if they're telling a human story, then it's going to transcend, you know, the method, and it's going to reach out and it's going to touch you. And hey, it may be a comic book story, but you can relate to those own things in your life and you can be touched and you can grow from that. And that's where these things excel, and where I think there's a shortcoming as it, you know, it appears with, you know, awards and things like that, is people look at the shell and don't see what's inside. Mm-hmm. And what's inside is extremely moving. And
right.
So you can just kind of glass it. Oh, it's just a comic book show. But, you know, that's the good thing. And what frustrates me, on the other hand, is when you don't have that writing and you don't have those things to kind of express those things. So, but like I said,
Batman Returns.
And then that weakens the argument for all the other shows that excel in that category. Yeah. And I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not just that, but there are many other ones. The original Punisher, the original Fantastic Four. I mean, I could name off a thousand different things.
Jeff, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, but it's great. And, you know, the thing about it is, I think the key example of this, really, the beauty of the writing and the complexity of the writing, is the Joker in this movie.
Yes.
And in Gotham, too, because of how smart they're writing the Joker. Mm-hmm. As a character, and Jerome as a character. It's not a caricature. It's not, it's deep. There's motivations there. We may not understand all the motivations, and the things that we hear coming out of their mouths may not be exactly what the true motivation is, but the strength at which they're written and how they're acted out is huge. Yeah. This movie would not have the impact that it did without Ledger's performance. Right. And I really hate it because of his acting style. He just became that character.
Yeah.
And it basically cost him his life.
Yeah.
And the writing is that good, is that you know, you can tell what his motivation is, the way that he speaks, the characterization that he uses to walk out those written down things just makes this movie. And I think people had been complaining about Gotham because they liked Jerome as a character. They could see that, and he's not there anymore. And so they brought him back, and to see him walk out that character and pay homage to Ledger and the other Jokers out there, but make it his own. And so that's what I think, you know, it's a real key tie in why we kind of chose this movie, is how central the Joker is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Joker is essentially the madness of Gotham. That is how I look at it. And he's so important to the Batman story. And I was so glad that he was created, because otherwise Batman is just a black and white, it's Batman cleaning up the city. But and there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing. But bringing the Joker into it as a foil for Batman ups his game.
Yeah.
He has to up his game to go up against the Joker, because not only does he have to challenge himself to stick to his rules, because so many times could he just kill Joker and, you know, the city would be safer for it. And, you know, how many times have I yelled into a comic or onto my television and just said, you know, kill him already? Right? Because the city would be so much better without the Joker, but it's against his code. And Batman wouldn't be better for it.
Mm-mm.
So there's that whole dynamic. And I think he just typifies the descent into madness that is Gotham. Mm.
Yeah. Yes.
So your turn, John.
You know, they left, there was no definitive end, you know, to Joker in this film. We didn't see him getting carted off by the police. We didn't see anything beyond him, you know, just hanging there upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know they had every intention, you know, to bring him back. And again, to Jeff's point, I mean, what a colossal shame to, not only for Heath Ledger's sake, but, you know, what they could have continued to have done with this character. It's really, really sad to me.
Yeah, me too. I was gutted.
Mm-hmm.
Gutted. Heath Ledger was brilliant, I think. And not just in this role. I mean, I liked him in so many other things as well. Mm-hmm. And to see that this kind of ruined him, I mean, I exult in his performance every time I watch this, because it's so above any other Joker performance I've ever seen. It's just crazy. And I mean, crazy. but the fact that it kind of ruined him, it just...
Well, it's interesting. You know, it's interesting. Like, my wife, she won't watch this film.
Because of that?
Well, not because of that, but she didn't even know the background, but as she, you know, as we would start to watch this film, she'd be like, there's something truly evil about, you know, what's being put here. And she's, I can't finish this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was that real, that,
right.
You know, that true to the character, to life, to everything. And it was, she just kind of shuddered
There's two different kinds of Joker that there can be played. And one of the things that I had proposed us watching would be the Killing Joke, the animated feature. I thought that was a little too dark, to be honest. And why we chose this over that, I mean, this is dark. But that movie is, it's a cartoon, by the way. But it's even darker. It tackles some themes that I don't think we would be comfortable discussing here.
Yeah.
But there's that Joker, this Joker in this movie and in that series and all that. And then there's the campy, you know, 1966 Joker, who is more fun with the pop gun that says, you know, bang, as he points it at people. And honestly, I think it's the same Joker, but it's like he lives in one body. It's like there's like 10 different Jokers that all lives in one body, yeah. But they're all inherently evil. I mean, there's nothing other than malevolence inside of him. It's just there's a playfulness in him, which created this clown character. But then there's that evil underneath it. So I think
the beginning sequence of this film, which is just brilliant, with the bank robbery and everything. But even in that, you know, you've got the, you know, after he guts his own crew and everything and takes out the manager of the bank, you've got the clown, the humor, the, you know, the grenade that goes off and is just colorful smoke, you know, kind of a thing. and you're right. It is a perfect embodiment of both sides of this character.
Yeah. It's all one. I mean, we saw that on the 1966, the campy, you know, Joker. But I think honestly, on that show, if that show had lived today, we would have also seen the flip side of that Joker, which would have been the insane, crazy, dark side of that Joker, because it's the same Joker. We just saw the haha, you know, funny bang, you know, and the gun would have said bang, and then after 2 minutes, a bullet would have come out. You know what I mean? That's kind of how he is just, you know, I'm fooling you into thinking I'm this funny clown, but really I'm not. I'm, you know, hey, I'm in a nurse's outfit. Isn't that funny? But now I've blown up a hospital because isn't that funny? And I really do get that vibe. And I understand why your wife would think that, because there is something even under that clowny sort of surface that is inherently evil about the Joker. There's nothing redeeming about him. And I think that's what makes him so interesting, is that he has no morality, but he has definitely an agenda. And he's multifaceted despite that.
Yeah.
And so that's what makes him interesting. Usually I wouldn't like a character that just has no redeeming qualities. I mean, that would be something that turns me off completely. But to have no redeeming qualities yet still have facets, that's amazing. I mean, how can you do that with a character?
Or that didn't have the perfect foil in Batman.
Exactly. Right? Well, that's what makes... that's really what makes him. And, you know, that's his vendetta. I mean, that's his thing. Not only does he have a beef with Gotham, number one, because the city has it out for him, which is, I think, one of the main things that drives him. The city has it out for him because, you know, he made him. The city made him what he is. It's not his father. It's the city. The city's a terrible, horrible place. So I'm just going to take it down with me. But now Batman is saving Gotham, which means he's got to take Batman down too. So, and anyone who helps Batman. So that means Commissioner Gordon. That means he's got to corrupt everyone who helps Batman, which means Harvey, which means the mayor, which means, you know, everyone.
Yeah.
And he's got to show the dark side of the city. And that was his plan with the boats and with all that stuff. So amazing. Just an amazing movie. And that scene with the two fairies, that is by far one of my favorite character study moments in all of movie history, with watching to see who's going to make a decision, seeing that it's actually the prisoner boat that makes the first good decision.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they say, here, I'm going to make the decision for you. And the guy takes it and throws it. We're not going to kill the other boat. We're not going to do it. If they kill us, they kill us. You know, that's amazing to me. And seeing the other guy on the quote unquote good boat, you know, he wants to kill everyone. And yeah, it's just crazy. That whole character study. I mean, that fascinates me. Any character study fascinates me. So to watch everybody on those boats is just great for me.
Yeah, it was very telling, and just the way that, you know, Joker has a plan, and even though that it didn't go the way that he thought.
Right.
With one of them blowing the other up, he still had a plan of, okay, I'm going to blow him up anyway.
Right.
I'm going to override it. So.
And Batman's not going to let that happen.
No.
Not when he's standing right there. Yeah. That's not going to happen. And of course, what does it do? It makes you think about what you would do, which I'm like, oh, no, I can't. I can't think about it. I got to put it out of my head because I don't know what I would do. I would just sit there quiet as a lamb.
Shifting gears a little bit, Jim Gordon.
Right.
There is, and this is nothing detracting from Gary Oldman. I mean, he does a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see our Gotham Jim Gordon, you know, becoming this guy.
No.
And I don't know if that's just Ben McKenzie versus Gary Oldham, or if it's just if it's something in the writing. You know, we have to make our Jim Gordon in Gotham. You know, a little bigger than life because he has to carry the series. And I get that. But this Gordon seemed, I don't know, a little bit weaker, a little bit timid, a little bit just.
He's more broken.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He is. And, you know, I think that he could become this, but it would be very difficult. Very difficult. In the time frame that we have. Which would be what, like 8 years or so, maybe 10 years?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I don't know that it would happen in that amount of time.
Yeah.
It would take a lot longer to break him to this point. And he has, you know, his kids. He has both of his kids at this point. So he couldn't break that much with all of the things that he has going on in this movie. You know, you have to kind of add up everything that has happened to him in his life between Gotham and this movie. And yeah. I can't make enough things to hurt him enough, which is terrible. But you know what I'm saying? You know, yeah. To make him into that broken character. But on the plus side, I think the Gotham version of Commissioner Gordon, I would like him more. And again, that's not saying anything against Gary Oldman because I do like his portrayal.
Right.
But I like Ben McKenzie's version of Gordon, of James Gordon. One of the things I like about him is that he isn't sure where the dividing line is between black and white. And I think what he's doing right now is he is, and I've said this, you guys are probably tired of me saying this, but he is seeing what it's like to be in Batman's place right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when Batman grows up and becomes Batman, he'll already know what it's like to be that vigilante.
Right. He can pass that mantle directly over to him and be relieved that there's somebody in that spot to take what he's been bearing on his shoulders and be free to do things differently.
Right.
And I think that's going to be freeing for him to be able to say, I know how to support you and I'm going to support you from this side and I'm willing to do that because I know what you're going to have to do.
Right.
And like I said, it's two different characters, and I think they're both very equally Jim Gordon. And in some ways, I identify a little more with the movie character because of just what he's been thrust into. but he is not that character who is, once again, this is more of an Elseworlds thing where mm-hmm. he has not been forced into being that hero for Gotham that Gotham needs, like the Jim Gordon in the TV show.
Right. Yeah, right. The one in the movie has been a beat cop, and that's pretty much mm-hmm. it. You know, a detective, a beat cop. And he's never really had to straddle that line. He was always black or white. And I kind of like the nuanced James Gordon, the one who will be able to say, I get where you're coming from, Batman. I get it. 1,000%. And it's also setting up the I already know you're Bruce Wayne thing, which will be good, I think. I mean, if they decide to continue with these characters, or, you know, if I continue in my head with them, or if they continue with the books, which would also be great. Yeah. So I really like the all gray James Gordon. There's something to be said for characters that can see in the shades of gray area.
That's a great description.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really like that because even though it's hard to tell where to aim, when everything's gray, at least you sympathize with other people that are in that area. So later on, when you have to make a tough choice, you can kind of side with someone else that has had to make that same tough choice. Mm-hmm. And that really makes a very sympathetic character and someone you can identify with. So I love that about our James Gordon. And that is one thing that I have really... really latched onto with Gotham is how great our James Gordon is. Just amazing writing, especially since they tended to make him the hero of our story. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, they've kind of made him the Batman without putting a cape on him. You know, he's not really our Batman, but he's the eyes that we see through. So, mm-hmm. you know, while he's not Batman, he is kind of our... you know, our simulacrum of Batman. He's going to be the person that Batman will be able to lean on when he grows up because he's been there already, which is awesome.
Colin the Gray Knight.
Perfect. The Gray Knight. I like that. Yeah. If I could just figure out who's going to be Barbara. Like, who's going to be his daughter, Barbara? Who is going to have Barbara? I just, is it going to be Lee? I don't know. Mm. Or is it going to be Stabby Babs? I love Stabby Babs now. Oh. If you had told me I was going to love her in the first season, I would have laughed so hard.
I think we all would have.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Okay, so anyone else that moved over? I mean, we had Scarecrow.
I totally forgot that Scarecrow was even in this.
Me too.
which, you know, I mean, is only in for 5 minutes. So, right. But yeah, but it was nice. It was a nice crossover to see that through all three films.
Right.
Of the Nolanverse. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And what's his name? Killian. It's Killian something. I can't remember. It starts with a C. That's why I remember his name is Killian. Yeah. He's really good in this movie, too. Even the little brief snippet. And he's just crazy as a loon. But it's nice to see him in it. You're right. I would have liked to see an Arkham Asylum movie in the Nolanverse. Mm. I think that would have been great to just see kind of a... everything goes crazy in Arkham sort of thing. But I know that would have been cost prohibitive. It would have been really cool though, to see them all trapped in Arkham Asylum and have Batman have to try and get people out or something. Oh, it just would have been great to see all those villains all in there.
They would have had to, you know, downsize the Batmobile a little
big
bit.
Time. Well, I mean, it would have been a bottle movie.
Yeah.
You know, stuck in Arkham Asylum.
Right.
Like have them take the guards hostage or something. And I would have loved to see them do the Suicide Squad movie because then it would have been good. But hey, can't have it all. Okay, so let's do a little sum up and then we'll go to our our feedback. I loved it. That's my sum up. I loved it.
Yeah, this is one of those films that I can go back to over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I pick out something new. I see different things. I don't know if this film will ever get old to me. Yeah. And this is Batman at the core of who he is and some of the best of who he is.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is really, there's some things that I would have liked to see in this movie. I really hated that, this was, getting it in town, I hated not seeing Wayne Manor. I know it was still being rebuilt and it just kept him close to town, but I kind of missed that. But overall, it just really felt like true Batman in his prime and coming, really being in his own and being that what he needed to be. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and it really gets summed up in that last speech that Gordon makes about, Batman being the hero that Gotham needs at that time, and that's really what he is. And so I really like this movie that way.
Yeah, that last little part of the movie where he's talking to, what is it, John? Is that what his son's name is?
I think so, yeah.
Yes, yeah. I can't remember. Yeah.
I think his son's name is John because he's not in much of the continuity. I think his name is John. But when he's talking to his son and he's telling him all about Batman, and I know there's a lot of little trite phrases there, but they all fit. Why is he running? Because we have to chase him. I mean, there's just so many things that he says there at the end of the movie. And it's just all Batman, all of it.
Yeah.
It just gives you chills every time you watch it. And it's another thing I love. And there won't be another Nolan verse Batman. No. I mean, there won't be another equal to it, I don't think. So, this was, I think, the pinnacle of Batman movies.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there was nowhere to go from here.
No, I mean, right?
Yeah. as much as I enjoyed The Dark Knight Rises, it just doesn't, it really doesn't even compare.
No, it doesn't. And I think they were still reeling from the loss of Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
And, they couldn't do what they had planned.
Yeah.
And they were kind of scrabbling. They still had a contract. And it showed. It wasn't a horrible movie, but it showed. And it was almost like, we have to do it. We'll give you something good, but it's not going to be like the last movie. That's going to stand by itself because of Heath.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how could they follow it up with anything better than
Yeah. Well, and there were certain villains that just wouldn't fit in the Nolanverse. I mean, they're even as good as Robin Lord Taylor is as Penguin. Penguin does not fit in the Nolanverse.
No.
There's nothing about his persona and character that fit into that universe. So they knew exactly, what they could do, and they did it just so well.
Yeah. And Bane did fit in the universe.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And, that's kind of the thing. I'm glad that they've opened up things now with the universe, the DC, because as much as I enjoyed the Nolanverse, I really think there is a way to bring those characters in that may not have fit in his verse. That mm-hmm. can be mm-hmm. rich and mm-hmm. open up storytelling. And that's why I appreciate Gotham, because while they have had those interesting characters, they don't feel like they're out of place and it doesn't feel too campy.
Right.
I don't think that would have happened without Nolan's vision there, but it was somewhat limiting. But I really appreciate what they did.
Yeah. Yeah, and we also have Arrow for all the other Batman villains.
Or crossing over villains, as we will talk about later.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Jeff, you want to take the first feedback? Hold on a minute.
There it is.
I can do a bunch of other.
The Hall of Justice.
I can do a bunch of other ones. Okay. Why don't you take Chris's feedback?
Okay. Chris says, hi, Karen, Jeff, and John. Well, nothing like waiting to the last minute, is there? My company has moved everyone on third shift to first and second shift, so I've been spending my time deciding what my new shift will be. I'm going to miss walking at night, but I look forward to actually sleeping at night, so this is a good thing.
See, I always liked the third shift. I'm a night owl. I'm a huge night owl.
But he says, but that's not why you called. After the soul-crushing trial that was Batman Returns, it was refreshing to see something good.
Oh, Chris, how we love you.
Yes, indeed. He says, The Dark Knight is my second favorite Nolan Batman and my third favorite overall behind Batman 89 and Batman Begins. It features my favorite villain in the Joker, and until last season of Gotham, Heath Ledger's Joker was my second favorite interpretation, but Cameron Monaghan's Jerome passed him.
Wow.
Hamill's animated Joker is still the best going away, and I think Monaghan was wise to model Jerome on this version. Both Hamill and Monaghan have given the Jokers the right blend of humor to scare the crap out of you menace.
Yeah.
Ledger nailed the menace maybe best of all, but fell short on the humor and showmanship of the character. So that's why he's in third. Thanks, and looking forward to Flashpoint Paradox, Chris.
Yeah, there was less humor in this Joker, definitely. So if you wanted that balance, it wasn't in this Joker. I get it.
Hamill.
Right, yeah. Mark Hamill does a great job with the balance, I have to say. My husband and I were actually talking about voice actors the other day because we were talking about John DiMaggio, who plays Bender on Futurama. I don't know how we got on the subject of him, but we were. And there was a conversation that John DiMaggio had at one point saying that some of his fellow voice actors, and he didn't name names, but some of them resented actors that got into voice acting because they felt they were taking jobs away from people that only did voice acting. And I thought, you know, he and I talked about it, my husband and I, and what the world would be deprived of if Mark Hamill had never become the Trickster or the Joker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And others. I mean, there were a few, but Mark Hamill in particular as the Joker was groundbreaking. I mean, he's really done his own version of the Joker. And the fact that Cameron Moynihan is modeling his Joker on that version of it.
Yeah.
Is telling, I mean, that you would model your version, an acted part on a voice actor's portrayal of the Joker is, I mean, that's a huge deal. So, that's, I would never begrudge someone for going into voice acting. Never.
No, it's a huge thing because right now I'm listening to a dramatized audiobook, and it's a pretty all-star cast of people who are doing the voice acting in that. And it's just, after watching a lot of Ken Burns stuff, there's a difference between somebody who is reading and somebody who's a voice actor. Yeah. And voice actors are just amazing. I just have the highest regards of somebody who can take a printed words and make that character shine so that you take your imagination and put it into you know, into a visual spot. And so, yeah, it's just much props to that. And like you said, just having Monahan's take and say, okay, I want to model on that. So
right, where he actually has to physically portray a character and he's basing it on just a voice. I mean, that's crazy. So good. I love it.
I don't know if you guys have ever heard the Star Wars dramatizations that were done for NPR.
I haven't.
But Hamill, Anthony Daniels, Billy Dee Williams, there were a number of the film cast that came to do these dramatizations, and they are amazing. Mm-hmm. But I think even then, back in the, you know, back in the 70s, before Joker was ever on Hamill's, you know, radar, he understood and valued the, you know, the art and the dramatization of doing things in an audio format.
Right.
Mm. And it is. I mean, it's as visually stunning as the comics and the world of Gotham is. There is a place for, you know, the audio screen of your mind, you
right,
know, and creating these things, and it's amazing what he's been able to do on all aspects of the of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. So.
Mark Hamill is a crazy talented person. He really, really is.
Yeah,
I think probably the thing that I like the least of his roles is Luke Skywalker. I love Star Wars. I have no beefs about Star Wars. I went to see the movie 1,000 times when I was younger. I had all the figures and everything. But he was never my favorite person in them. Of course, I'm a huge Han Solo girl, you know. I played with the Star Wars figures, and I was like, I'll come save you, Han, and, you know, all that stuff. And Luke, of course, was like one of my minions. He was like, you know, I'll run the ship over here. You know, he was never one of my major characters. But ever since then, I've grown to really appreciate his talent in other areas. So when I see him on something like The Flash or here that he's going to do a voice in something, I get fangirly. You know, when I see him on Twitter, I get fangirly because, you know, he's very talented. But
yeah.
Yeah, so I get where Cameron's coming from, that he wants to model something after him. So, okay, I have audio. Shall I play it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. I haven't listened to it, so.
Good evening, Gotham. This is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. Okay, so I'm going to tell you up front that this is a slightly biased review because The Dark Knight is my favorite Batman movie. I really see Bruce in this version of Batman, because this version really shows that he has a conscience and how much weight he carries around as our favorite Caped Crusader. At one point, he even tries to convince Harvey that he's really what the city needs, not Batman. And I don't know if Gotham will ever get to Bruce being Batman, but I feel that our Bruce in Gotham will grow up to be Batman with a conscience, regretting having to do dark things to keep Gotham safe. The other thing I thought about while watching these Batman movies so far is that I'm very thankful for Gotham as a weekly TV show because they can show character development in a more slow and detailed way. A two-hour movie does not have time for this level of detail, and so far we've been treated to a few seasons of watching Oswald Cobblepot, Enigma, Bruce, Alfred, Selina, and Jerome slowly morph into these characters that are featured in the movies already in their full villain or hero form. The scene in this movie where there's a man painted with a clown face in a Batman suit reminded me of our mid-season break episode where Bruce had the clown makeup on, facing Jerome. And I know that it was talked about that the actor that played Jerome is mostly basing his character on the animated Mark Hamill Joker, but I believe his crazy just the way I believe Heath Ledger. Heath Ledger completely inhabits this character. I truly believe and fear him. I truly believe that he cannot be reasoned with and just wants to watch the world burn. Aside from the amazing character portrayals in this film, there is also lots of fun toys. You get to see Lucius Fox develop all sorts of fun things. My favorite of which is the Batmobile that turns into the Batcycle, and the plan that Alfred came up with that he learned in Burma that allowed Bruce to jump off the top of a building in Gotham. That was an absolutely beautiful scene that immediately took me back to the first moment I saw it on the big screen in the movie theater. I also think that this Alfred is very much like our Gotham Alfred, still trying to take care of his boy even though he's a man now. I feel like the two versions have a similar charming wit. This movie gets 10 out of 10 double-headed coins. Catch you soon for a paradox, a Flashpoint paradox. Green Butterfly, out.
Thank you, Green Butterfly.
Such great analysis, too.
Yeah, that's great.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, John. Shall we do fisticuffs to see who reads Phoenix's?
We could probably both do it.
We probably could. There's a lot. You want to switch on and off?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, we'll just take it section by section.
So. Okay. He says, excited. This is arguably my favorite Batman. Then again, watching to analyze can change one's viewpoint. Gotham feels more like our Gotham. The crimes feel gritty like ours. Love the telling shots of Joker in the heist, letting the viewers in. Joker, that's his header. He does a header for every villain or character. The simplicity of the crooks all taking each other out is so Joker. Also like the use of William Fitcher as the crooked bank manager. He adds star power with a recognizable face, though no one ever knows his name. Lol. And you know what? I don't know his name either, but I recognize him from all the things that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
Love all his lines. Smart. Believable as our Jerome. The storytelling is a similar trait as well. His use of videos as a psychological terror weapon is also a clear parallel with Jerome. Though I must admit, this Joker, who doesn't have the normal origin story provided, seems as if he appeared from nowhere to terrorize Gotham. And like our Jerome, he's a born entertainer and knows how to work a crowd. The interrogation scene clearly shows Joker in the know and in control. For all of Batman's rage, Joker knows his audience and plays all the right tunes. His use of the public both for the search for Reese and the Sophie's Choice on the fairies also reminds me of Jerome's manipulation of the city and use of the cult of Joker in our most recent mid-season finale episodes. You won't kill me out of some misplaced sense of self-righteousness. The dialogue between Joker and Batman after he is caught mirrors, pardon the pun, the conversation we witnessed in the last episode, the first of many iterations of the same theme uttered between Bruce and the Joker. It nicely shows that despite Cameron Moynihan's assertions that he is influenced by the Hamill Joker, the Gotham writers use several sources to make him a fully fleshed out, believable proto-Joker. Mm-hmm. Why don't you take Gordon and Scarecrow?
Okay. Gordon. While having no resemblance, the tactical reasoning of Gordon is a plausible result of an aged Gordon from Gotham. He also clearly does not know Bruce Wayne is Batman, as shown by the conversation where Bruce asks if he should go to the hospital, to which Gordon responds, "You don't watch the news much, do you, Mr. Wayne?" Gordon's playing the gray also feels like our Gordon, as shown in his detente with Harvey Dent. One thing he does not show, however, is Gordon's raw anger. Our Gordon's raw anger, I should say. His relationship with the commissioner doesn't seem as close as we see in Gotham, though. We also see much more patience in Gary Oldman's version, as displayed by the finale with Two-Face. There is no way Ben McKenzie's Gordon could stay restrained when facing an enemy with a gun to his family's throat. No doubt.
No.
Scarecrow. Ah, Scarecrow. Really wish he wasn't in this one. Not sure why Nolan insisted on keeping him in all three. I was okay with him in Batman Begins, but here he just seems pathetic and stupid. That said, I'm ready for the Crane family to make their return to Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of liked seeing him in this one. It was like a little Easter egg for me. It was just like, hey, it's that guy. And here's a section on Bruce / Batman. This Batman is a smart one, a man of action, a man of decisiveness. Developing Bruce as a second personality is a very comic aspect. Although we have seen Bruce act a few times, it would be nice to see some of this brought more into Gotham. Bruce's knowledge of the underworld also alludes to his understanding of the seedy underbelly of Gotham. He is learning to respect and leverage with Selina in our Gotham. His desperation for a normal relationship with Rachel also shows a scarred tender side, possibly caused by a childhood betrayal of emotions by our own Selina. While on the subject of Rachel, some of her story really reminds me more of the potential tragedy of Lee's story arc than that of any of the relationship of Batman's we've seen thus far. Then again, Gordon also at times seems like an origin story for Batman more than Gordon at times, even though we know it's just a stand-in hero for our young Bruce to learn from and emulate. Alfred does seem like our Alfred. I think of all the character portrayals, he is the most like as to a fully developed version of a Know Your Limits. Sounds like advice Pertree could give next week on Gotham. His story of being in Burma reminds us of his Royal Air Force SAS background that our Alfred has. Some men just want to watch the world burn, indeed.
Dent. I want Two-Face. Dent exists, but we haven't had anything yet really to give him. Die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Mm-hmm. I've always loved this portrayal of Dent. So tragic, yet so on point as to the classic origin of Two-Face. I also like while Dent made his own odds, Two-Face is a slave. Mm-hmm. Crime bosses. Falcone family is here with Maroni, dead in our universe, trying to take over. He seems much more similar to Falcone, though, than the opportunistic Maroni we had in season one. His willingness to betray Joker also rings similar to our Falcone, who knows when to cut his losses and work with the GCPD.
Mm-hmm.
Lucius Fox, as smart as ours, he seems loyal to Bruce and the Wayne Enterprises inside man that he has been shown to be in our Gotham as well. New costume, he can turn his head in. Lol. Love the weapons gadget scene. Very much an homage to 007 in Q.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's how he was created, kind of, yeah. Was that sort of character. I also love the simplicity of how Lucius deals with the nosy accountant that discovers Bruce Wayne is Batman, even though the evidence is only enough to show Bruce Wayne is supplying Batman. I can totally see our Lucius reacting the same way. I feel Gotham's Lucius has also the seeds of morality shown by Morgan Freeman's original, with his hard stance on the cell phone imaging system. Also thinks this was a bit of a political statement here by Nolan concerning NSA surveillance. Even though that was before the whole NSA thing, I think it was kind of a big brother-y sort of, hey, you know. Sure. It was almost a pre-person of interest.
Yeah,
it
was about
sort of thing. It makes me wonder if that's kind of where they got the idea. Absolutely. And then his quibbles. The money laundering plot is a bit weak. No, okay. The money laundering plot is just a MacGuffin. This is my opinion. It's nothing. You're not supposed to pay attention to it. I have always seen it as... Oh, I'm sorry. I should have continued.
You're absolutely right.
I have always seen it as a MacGuffin to bring in the crime family, as well as the tie into China, which had started to become a requirement for the international market. How do we know? The guards all speak Mandarin, whereas if they were really a Hong Kong bank, they would all speak Cantonese. Okay, I'm interrupting here. The one thing I noticed, again, is the man who played the Chinese guy, he was on Arrow, remember? The first season of Arrow.
Oh, yeah.
He was... in the whole thing with Merlin and exactly. And I was like, oh, it's that guy from Arrow. He's on all the comic things. There are also aspects of Gordon and Dent's planning that seem out of scope of control. Like, how did Gordon know he would get a chance to possum dead when the mayor was assaulted? How does Dent know Batman will save him when he obviously did not plan his confessing to be Batman with a ready-to-confess Bruce? And the, quote, you do play things close to the chest, unquote, statement by Dent shows he and Gordon weren't working together either. I suppose it's logical the Batman would not let someone else take the fall for him, but Gordon knowing to go underground and where to be, it works, I suppose, but seemed to just be a setup designed to allow the good guys to match the sheer cunning of Nolan's Joker, who, despite even this, still manages to be one step ahead of our heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was meant to be kind of showing how in sync they all were, that they were working together as a team, even though they aren't all working together as a team. The city knows who Batman is, and the good guys know what he's going to do. And the bad guys don't. And I think that's kind of his strength. So, and that's me. That's not him.
I can hand wave that.
Yeah, me too. I can hand wave it
because
too.
Because of how good everything else was solidly written. So.
Yeah. And again, he doesn't have much in the way of quibble. So
no.
I'm all right with that. So great feedback, Phoenix.
Yeah.
Great, great, great. Go ahead.
So the good news is we have got one more Gotham Extra.
We do.
We've got one more Gotham Extra. So the next one we're looking at is Flashpoint Paradox, and it's one of the animated movies, and we've got good news. You can watch it for free.
Yay!
All you have to do is go to our blog post here. We've got a link to it. It's on the CW Seed website and app, and you can watch it for free. And so take a chance to watch that. Take your notes, do your comparison, because this has some different versions of Batman and other characters in it, and kind of compare those things. And the feedback deadline for that one is March 16th at 6 p.m.
Yeah, another one that I can watch over and over again. I really like it.
Yeah, it's such a good one.
But it's the flip side of this movie. It is, while there are dark places in it, it's much, much lighter
than this movie. I got to say, I have seen several things coming on the CW Seed. A lot of the newer animated movies are on there. And so just go on there and check it out. There's some good ones I'm looking forward to watching. So, do get your feedback in.
Yeah. And watch Vixen, by the way. Vixen's on there.
Yeah.
So if you watch Legends of Tomorrow, you should really watch Vixen on there because they're, you know, granddaughter and grandmother.
Yeah.
On there. And it's the Vixen from Arrow, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Because that's the granddaughter of the Vixen that's on Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool.
So speaking of that feedback, you can get that to us in several ways. You can call 304-837-2278. You can also go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can leave text, you can attach an audio file, you can use the provided SpeakPipe widget. You can also get us at Twitter at GothamGSM, or we have a Facebook group as well, facebook.com/groups/Gotham. Gotham Undercover, I should say.
Or just type in Gotham Undercover.
To subscribe in iTunes for any of the Golden Spiral Media podcasts, just go to goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes.
That's right.
Make it so.
Make it so.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a little bit of news. So thanks to Ken in Chicago, even though I saw it as a breaking news from TV Line in my inbox, which I was going to go and post it, but Ken in Chicago posted it on Twitter, and then it was already in our Facebook group. Alexander Siddig from Deep Space Nine, who played Dr. Bashir on Deep Space Nine, DS9. He's going to be playing Ra's al Ghul on Gotham.
Nice.
And it says from Fox, as Bruce pulls the veil off the Court of Owls, he finds the man pulling the strings is the enigmatic and powerful Ra's al Ghul. With his past shrouded in mystery, Ra's al Ghul uses cunning and deception to lay waste to his foes. As the leader of an international criminal organization known as the League of Shadows, Ra's al Ghul will prove himself to be Bruce's most dangerous adversary yet. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this. Alexander Siddig, who is a phenomenal actor.
He's great.
Yeah. And I love Dr. Bashir in DS9. He was one of my favorites.
So. Yeah. I loved him on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. Really and good. I love that they're bringing in that and tying it into the Court of Owls and just making that story even more intriguing to say, okay, where are they going to go from here? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Here we go. We have Five, who's already tied to the Court of Owls, mm-hmm. who we know in comic book lore becomes a Talon. Where is he going to get his training?
The League of Shadows.
From the League of Shadows. I mean, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's amazing that they're going to tie all that in together. I mean, that... It's a no-brainer. That's fantastic. Yeah. So, just great. And he's going to be such a better Ra's al Ghul. No, the only question is, how are they going to pronounce it? Yeah. If they don't say
it. Ra's.
No, it has to be Ra's, right? Because that's how it's pronounced. Please don't pronounce it any other way. It's Ra's al Ghul. Ra's.
That's how it was Batman Begins, right?
Yes. Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
Okay, because any other way is just dumb. Can I just say that right here? Ra's al Ghul. Ra's al Ghul. I don't care if you make the S sound a little bit different. Ra's al Ghul. I don't care. Just Ra's al Ghul. No. Sorry, no.
Yeah, there's no I-N-H in there. What?
No. No, it's an apostrophe S.
That's right.
All right. Crazy. Yeah. Well,
thank you both again. This has been a fantastic discussion.
What a great discussion and a great movie. And I love talking to you guys. We're going to have you on as a guest more often, John.
Thank you. I would love that. Not even to substitute. Just get in there.
No, just a guest and talk. But we'd have 3-hour podcasts every week too, because it's fun to talk to you. So next week again, or in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about Flashpoint Paradox, and then Gotham will be back after that, and many more things to come. So we'll see you on the other side of a paradox.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Night.